History Project on Calhoun, South Carolina. The interview is taking place in Jackson, Mississippi, and the date is August 21st, 1988. The interviewer is W.J. Meganson. And may I ask your name, please?
Jane Mamsie.
Your maiden name?
Jane Vandeville.
And may I ask your age?
Yes, I'm 82.
Okay, so you were born in
1906.
In contrast to some other people we're talking to on the project, you were not originally from Calhoun.
No.
When did you first arrive there?
We moved to Calhoun on the 19th of, I believe it was the 19th of April, 1919.
And where did you come from?
From Asheville, Georgia.
Where is that?
That's about 6 miles north of Toccoa. A little, you know, just a little rural community, actually.
And why did you wind up in Calhoun?
Well, my father had worked with the construction of the double track coming through on the railroad there, and he had been stationed there for some time, and his crew lived in a house up close to where the Cochrans lived, and he wanted to buy a home, and he thought that that would be a good place since my brother Hubert would be going to college, and he thought that was a pretty house for sale, and so he bought the house, had my mother come over and take a look at the house, and she liked what she saw. And my father bought the house and paid for it in full when he bought it. I thought that was rather interesting.
Yes. A particularly remarkable house. Tell me about it and how far back it goes.
Well, we researched it and came up with that it was built possibly circa 1850. And the house had been built, part of the house, the original house, had been built much earlier than the addition, when the addition was added. The recollection that I have of the house was that your great-great uncle and his wife lived in this house as bride and groom.
And who was that?
That was your Uncle John Carey.
Mm-hmm.
Your great Uncle John Carey. And then I don't know how long they lived there, but Aaron Boggs's son John came to live in Calhoun, and that was when the house was doubled in size. There were six large rooms downstairs with a wide hall. I suppose it was about maybe 10 feet wide going all the way through the house, and there was a porch all the way across the front of the house covering, passing through two rooms and that wide hallway, and then down the side of the house for the length of three rooms.
So it was an L-shaped porch.
It was L-shaped, and there was an L-shaped porch. And then it had two chimneys, and one brick came up through the porch on the west side, that added porch. And it furnished fireplaces for the room when the room was added upstairs. There were two upstairs rooms and a nice hallway. And the chimney furnished, you know, it had two fireplaces, one downstairs and one upstairs, and the same thing on the other end of the house. And each one of the rooms in the house had a fireplace.
Was the porch rectangular, or did it make a circular sweep?
No, it was rectangular. It was rectangular, and we had a swing hanging right in the corner there that you could get to good breezes.
When you first arrived there, was the outside of the house painted?
Well, yes, it was painted, but it needed being repainted, which we had done. A old maid and a bachelor had lived in the house, and he was crippled. And we found the house in very, very poor shape inside, and we had to do a great deal of work.
The reason I ask about painting on the outside is I understand that some of the houses, perhaps farther out, were not painted at that time.
That's right, yeah.
Do you remember who the people were who lived there immediately before you?
Yes, I do, if I can think of. Oh, what was her name?
While you're thinking, let me tell you a brief story.
Okay.
I had never heard before about John Carey and his wife Ella living there.
Yes.
But that makes a good deal of sense, because in the Pekin Sentinel in 1891, it said that the dimensions of Calhoun would extend out to where John Carey and his wife lived. So that's exactly
there. Oh,
I see.
Yeah.
And she was the first postmistress for the Fort Hill Post Office, which was in fact located at their house. And I'm told they had a mail slot cut so that people could just come and drop letters through.
I don't believe that was the house, though, Jimmy, that that they lived in. Now this was when they first married, and but I don't believe it was that house that they used as a post office. Now the reason I don't is because of the front door of the house was the original front door, and it was a beautiful door with an oval shaped glass, and it was carved around on the bottom of the underneath the glass, and then on the sides of it as it came on up. And I believe that that was the original original door. However, that I could be wrong about it.
The story I've been told about the post office slot was it was not at the door, but somewhere, and it may have been just a lean-to section they have added. I don't know. But certainly
there
not
wasn't
the
a lean-to section on that. As far as I know, there was never a lean-to section on the house.
Have you remembered who lived there before you moved in?
Well, that's what I know. I can't.
And who do you think first built the house?
I don't have any idea. We tried to find out as much as we could. I remember that we were trying to set up the date, settle on a date for it. And I talked to Billy and told her I wanted to know, because I was getting ready for the lady who was drawing it here. Have you seen it? The
yes,
drawing.
Yes, very beautiful.
Anyway, and we wanted to finalize on the date the house was built. And she got in her car before Sunday school and ran down to Stone Church. She might have told you this, to look on the Careys' tombstone to see when they died, to kind of figure out how old they were. You know, so we could have some idea about when the house was built. Now, I know that your grandmother and my father were born the same year.
And what year was that?
1871.
I ask because that's what is on my grandmother's tombstone, but I think it's a year late.
Is that right? Well, the reason I was thinking that they were born I was thinking they were born the same year, that they were the same age, and I knew that Miss Carey was older than your grandmother, and so we tried to figure it out. You know, it may be off several years, or it may be, you know, fairly close.
At any rate, it would have been one of the very first houses around.
That's right. It was. I would have an idea that the house was built was one of, like you say, one of the very first houses around. I always felt that it would be closer to the Calhoun Mansion than most any of them that were built around there.
Let me go back then and ask you about your parents. Your father's name was?
Johnson Jeremiah Vanderbilt.
Obviously he was a railroad man.
Huh? Oh, yes, he was. He was originally, when my mother and father married, he was a railroad man. And then when we went to Georgia and we were there for, several years, I guess for about 6 or 7 years, and he had a mercantile business there, and he owned 3 farms in that area. So then after when the First World War came on, and of course they were building that double track from Atlanta into Washington on to New York, but he was contacted to come back and work for the railroad. He was a supervisor in that area of building the double tracks. Then after that, he was a section foreman and had an area there. I've forgotten how far it extended on the double track, but I don't. But he worked there for. Well, let's see. He worked there for maybe about, I don't know, 7 years. He had to retire in 1927, so we had not been living there 10 years when he had to retire due to poor health.
Do you remember when, which railroad he first worked for?
I don't know, but it was it was in South Carolina, and I know at one time he was at Cross Hill, South Carolina, and I don't know whether that was the Southern Railroad or not. And then they lived, and at one time my mother and father lived in Alexandria, Virginia, and he was with the railroad there. And then my brother was, they were in Cross Hill when my brother was born, but they had lived in another place in South Carolina, and then he was transferred to Newell, North Carolina, and I was born in Newell, North Carolina, and that is 6 miles out of Charlotte, and that's where the Charlotte branch of the University of North Carolina is now. It's on the little town of Newell.
Railroads were obviously very important at the time, and even just at Calhoun, the railroad went through about 4 different names from the time it started to
a
lot of mergers and closings. Mm-hmm. When you moved to Calhoun, how did you actually get there from Georgia?
Well, we came on the train. Mm-hmm. Yeah, our furniture came and it was in a box car. It was, and it came just like freight would come, I guess. They put the boxcar on the siding, and then it was, that's where they unloaded. That's not what you, I guess that siding is what you call it anyway, a special track that they, where they park things to unload them.
This was, I presume, before you had an automobile?
No, we had an automobile before that. We had an automobile as early as 19 and 15. It was a Ford touring car, the kind that you put the plastic, closed it up, which you didn't call curtains, that's what you call them, plastic curtains around when it rained. And no, we had a car, I imagine it was around 19 and 14 or 15 that my father bought the car, because I remember one time he went to Tocoa, and on the way back he was going around those steep curves there, and he turned the car over. But it happened that somebody came along and could get him, help him get the car back up straight, and fortunately he was not injured, and I know it was 2 or 3 days before he admitted to us that he had turned over. Well, when I said that we came on the train, I guess we did. I just don't recall whether my father drove the car back the last time he was at home before we moved, or I just don't recall. I don't recall that we came in the car. I think we rode the train. But that's been a long time ago,
Right. Well, tell me, if you will, about the place of the railroad in the life of Calhoun.
Well, I don't know. It was not only the place for people to travel, both Calhoun and Clemson and all the area around there was before buses. It was that only mode of travel, because the highways weren't, particularly for any distance. I can remember when we lived in Georgia and would drive to Westminster. And it would take us a whole day to drive from at least a half day to drive from Asma, Georgia, to Westminster, a distance of about, not over 40 miles, I don't suppose. And we'd have to go through these covered bridges, and it used to frighten me to death because it was just a one-way traffic, and you'd have to get your car up and go up so you could look through the covered bridge to see that if anything is coming. And if something was coming, you had to back off, and it was a treacherous thing, and I'd always cover my face and be scared to death, you know, while we were back and waiting for the other, either car or horses or mules coming through there. And that was also a frightening thing because they were afraid of cars. And they would, you know, sometimes boot and snort. It was a fearful thing.
One of the events you referred to earlier was the double tracking. What was that all about?
Well, because there was so much need for train travel that they put that in to facilitate transportation in the states.
Did this affect the course of the railroad at all?
Oh yes, it did. They had to regrade. You can see a lot of those highways up there go where the old railroad, you know, bed was.
You mentioned something months ago when we were talking that didn't make sense then, the cutout.
That's what they called it. They called it a cutout, that's right. Mm-hmm.
What is the cutout?
They had to cut down on the mountains or hills or what have you, and on either side of the railroad. You can see them on that, going from the intersection there on,
123.
123. You can just, you know, going on up there and turning to get on the highway. Now I'm talking about the one that comes up by all the eating places there, you know, at Clemson and on up through that cut.
Well, if you go about a quarter of a mile outside of the terminal now at Calhoun, you can see where the railroad takes a sharp
turn. That's
right.
That's right.
To the northeast.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And the cliff is just
cliff
sitting
is,
there.
That's right. Uh-huh.
What about the railroad station itself? Is it now where it always has been?
Yes, as far as I know. Uh-huh.
And was there, when you first arrived there, an underpass?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that underpass has been there the whole time. They had to have it, you see, in order. Well, that main line through there and that underpass, it must have been, I really don't know when that was constructed.
It was certainly there by the time that they double-tracked, because
it was
taken immediately after the double-tracking.
Yeah, I know it. Well, I tell you what, but you see, originally, it seems to me, originally, it only had one way under there, Jimmy. It seems to me when we went there in, maybe not. When was this taken?
Right after the double tracking, about 1920.
Well, okay, I think they had to put a new, underpass. I think they had to take it to broad, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe that was always, but it seems to me when I first went there there was just one opening and you, each lane went through that now, but maybe I'm all wrong, because see, I can be foggy about some things when you start asking. Let's see, from 1919 to 89, you know, that's about 60. That's long. Why is it longer than that, isn't it?
Nearly 70. It's
nearly 70. Yeah, like in a year being 70 years. That's right.
Do you remember who was the station agent at Calhoun when you went there?
I do not.
Or do you remember any of the others who were ever
there?
Yeah,
I remember Tom Whiten, who used to be there. He was there for quite a long time. And I think, I don't know, Tom is about the only one I can remember until this man who still lives there. I think he possibly was the last agent, and you'd like to know who he is.
Is that Mr. Neely?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
one I remember from my childhood.
Yeah.
Did the railroad provide any type of housing, or did the station agents have to do that themselves?
Oh, no, they had to do that. They had to do that for themselves.
And how many other people would have worked at the station besides the station master?
Well, they had
a telegraph agent.
Well, now the agent usually did that, and maybe they did have a telegraph agent. But what I'm trying to think is the express that took care of the express, and it's, I cannot remember. Maybe the one I remember most is Tom White down there. I think he had one assistant with him there when he was the time that I can that, and that was. Well, as I told you, I was only there 5 years before I went away to college, and as I recall, his name was Mel Rice, I believe, who worked there with Tom White.
They must have had a couple of fellows working as baggage handlers.
Well, I don't recall. I really don't.
Did you as a child ever play around the railroad tracks? Or
no, good night. No, heavens. No, that was, wouldn't have ever dreamed of doing it.
Was that because of your father's connection with the railroad?
No, I think it was because it was just, my mother wouldn't allow it. It would have been a very dangerous thing.
A lot of the other kids in town seemed to have managed to do what would seem fairly dangerous.
Well, now I tell you what I have done as I grew older. I can remember maybe we would go to walk on Sunday afternoon and walk and step on the cross ties, and always remember that we mustn't be down that Seneca River when the train came through.
Why not?
Huh?
Why not?
Well, because there was no place to stand while the train was passing. You'd be in Seneca River. That would be the reason that you wouldn't want to be there, because you'd have no place safely, stand safely.
Did the Seneca River have a single or double track trestle over it?
It had a double track trestle over it, I feel sure, by the time I knew about it. Because, see, the double track was practically finished when we moved there.
Do you have any reason to remember whether the original trestle was higher or lower than the present
one? I have no recollection, huh?
This double tracking is interesting and ironic because in the 1950s, Southern Railroad decided not to double track.
That's right. Well, you see, so you know why so many is because we had both bus and plane transportation, and the railroads were not used as much, and so that cut down on the expenses a great deal. Think of all the trains they took off, too.
One particular advantage that you can provide us that I'm particularly interested in talking to you is arriving in Calhoun at a specific point of time after you were old enough to know about what it was like. What are your impressions of the town from your first visit there, first arrival?
Well, I don't remember. I know it had just had two stores. It was not anything, It was just a tiny little place. It was bigger than the one I left, but I realized that it was... I think I was old enough to realize it was a very small place.
And what were the two stores?
The two stores was the one that your granddaddy had and the box store.
Was it already then known as the box store?
Yes, yeah.
And was Norman Boggs running it?
Norman Boggs was running it, yeah. They lived right across, they lived up on the street right across from us when we moved there.
That's on Calhoun Street?
Calhoun Street,
And since we haven't mentioned before, the house where you moved was at the intersection of Calhoun Street and Cochran Road.
That's right.
On the northeast corner.
Yeah.
Let's talk for a few minutes, if you will, about the two stores. First of all, if I can, about my grandfather's store. What do you remember about it?
Well, I remember that your grandfather handled mostly groceries I can't remember whether he handled kerosene. That's when a lot of people were using oil for cooking. And of course, it was a long time before they ever had electric lights there, And I tell you, when my father put in Delco lights, we were one of the first in K Calhoun to have lights, and my father put in Delco lights in, I guess it was in early 1922.
What are Delco lights?
Well, it's something that has a, it's a, it has an electric, I remember it had, I don't know what you'd call it, but something like your air conditioning unit on the outside. It was a large thing, and it had its own power to generate electricity.
Was Delco a brand name for the battery?
Battery, it was a brand name for the lights, yeah, but the whole thing, yeah. And we had that put in 1922.
Well, it's this size unit you're talking about, equivalent to a modern-day air conditioning unit. Was that inside the house?
No, it was out. It was in a building outside.
And it would power lights for the entire house.
That's right, powered lights for the entire house.
And how often would it have to be serviced or replaced?
Well, I don't recall. I think it had batteries in it, and I don't recall because my daddy looked after it, you know, all the time, and I didn't. I had no occasion to even wonder about it, except if we never had any light failure. I remember that.
Was this before or after acetylene lights?
Well, I guess it was after acetylene lights. Yeah.
What were they like?
Well, we had an acetylene light at first, and I don't know. I think it had a bowl, and I'm sure it had some kind of liquid that was the power to turn it on. And one thing I remember was there was a little kind of a crepe looking thing that always fit around where the wick of the thing was. But that's about all I can remember.
So they were fairly similar in design, at least, to kerosene lamps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the one Delco unit would power lighting throughout the entire house.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Was there strips along the walls the way later electrical lights were run to take care of the connections from the battery?
No, they just wired the house as you would wire for electricity, with the cords hanging down, you know.
But the wiring was underneath the wall, not running along the side of it.
No, they got up. You know, and installed it so that it was just as the way electric lights were installed, and so they, when electricity finally came, they could use the same thing, the wiring, as they did for the Delco.
Well, you mentioned, or I did rather, the kerosene lights and other people having kerosene. Were people using kerosene for heating in Calhoun?
Well, when we first went there, we did not. It was a long time before we had a kerosene stove, you know. You've seen those kerosene cook stoves where they had the little tank over here. No, most everybody was cooking with wood or coal with that stove. Ours was a wood stove, and I remember for a long time.
And these, I presume, were in the days before indoor plumbing in Calhoun.
That's right. Of course, it was a long time before indoor plumbing that came along. Yeah.
What about telephones?
Huh?
Telephones?
Oh, yeah, they had telephones. I can't recall when. I'm sure there were telephones there when we first moved there, but at that time we did not have one, I remember. I just don't know. Can your mother remember when they first had a telephone?
I haven't asked her yet.
Uh-huh.
Apparently the people on the other side of the railroad tracks who were able to get service out of Clemson College
they had that, but I just can't recall about that.
Do you have any reason to know, since you had left from there presumably by that time, when either electric lights or indoor plumbing were added to Calhoun?
Well, I tell you what, I remember that your grandmother had indoor plumbing put in her hotel there. I would say maybe in 33 or 34, something like that. But I know we did not have it at home until 33 or 34. I don't. We didn't have it at home until later, I think around maybe 1940.
And what about electricity?
We had water and electricity both. Well, I don't know when the electric, I just don't recall the electric light having them in the house, and the Delco being just, you know, I just frankly do not remember when the electric lights were brought over there.
Before you had, or your family had electric lights, did they have any type of indoor ice box?
Oh yeah, we had an ice box from the time, we had an ice box in the, before we ever moved from Georgia to Calhoun, and it was a great big, I remember it was varnished. It was a big box. I imagine it must have been at least maybe over a yard wide and possibly not quite a yard deep. And there were no shelves in it, but you put your large piece of ice in there and put all the things that you had to, and it was lined inside with what do you call it, metal, some kind of, would it be zinc? No, but anyway, it was not tin. It was heavier metal than tin that would made the box insulated enough, you know, to hold, to keep the ice from melting.
Where could you get ice from?
Well, they delivered it.
Who delivered it?
Somebody, I think, I believe it was Clink Scales from